It's the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. It is the Friday, April 2nd, 2021 edition of the program. And it's great to have Ben Fredrickson with us, a little Ben Fred Friday, here on the Chris Raby Show from the Ophthalmology Associates Studios. Head to youreyedoc.com, youreyedoc.com. That's the website you go to for Ophthalmology Associates for all of your eye care needs, for all of your eye care questions. If you have questions about LASIK surgery, if you've been thinking about getting LASIK, but, you know, you hear people say, well, you can't wear your contacts for this long before LASIK, or you can't do this for this long after LASIK. Don't just listen to secondhand information. Ask the best. Ask the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. If this spring you're dealing with allergies, whether you're at the ball game or you're on the golf course, don't deal with them anymore. Get to Ophthalmology Associates and let the doctors take care of your eyes. Your eyes are too important. You deserve the best. So I need you to call them at 314-966-5000 or after you go to the website and check them out. Tell them that Chris Raby sent you. Tell them you heard about them on the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We are proud to be broadcasting today from the Ophthalmology Associates Studios on the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. All right, so let's welcome in Ben Fredrickson. Cardinals, a nice opening day win over the Cincinnati Reds yesterday as they get things going in a hurry with a little offensive explosion in the top of the first inning. Of course, you can read Ben in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, STLtoday.com, and he joins us from Cincinnati. Well, I assume, is it Cincinnati proper, or are you perhaps over the river in Kentucky?
I made a trip to Kentucky today to go to the Target that is across the bridge because I had to get, this is like, really, it really shows the grind here. Had to get
spent time in Covington.
I had to get one of those, what do they call them? USB mouse for my laptop. So I look like I'm like 95. I've got the laptop mouse. Not because I needed it, for myself, other than I think my keypad is on the fritz on my laptop. So it's a whole deal. And it was causing problems. So I said, I'll go to Target. And then I realized as I'm driving there, it was like only a 5-minute drive from the hotel. But I was in Kentucky. So there I was.
Shout out to Covington, Kentucky. Shout out to Rachel Bonnie's
wedding. Shout out to Target.
Shout out to Target. And shout out to the mice that we use for our laptops. I'm looking down right now. I use a Mac or an Apple mouse with my computer, and it's gotten to the point where I can barely operate a trackpad anymore. And like, I don't, this is going to sound weird, but like, I can't like click it well because I use my mouse so much. I hate the trackpad. The only thing I hate more than the trackpad are people whose trackpad is inverse and you have to scroll up to go down and down to go up. That to me is as bad as going sock, shoe when you're getting dressed. And don't ever apologize for wanting to, flaunt a little 21st century technology using the wireless Bluetooth USB mouse.
Well, I'm glad that you do it as well. It makes me feel a little bit better. I thought it was only like ancient people who use this setup.
But you probably can use a trackpad.
I can, and I would, but mine is like, it's falling apart. Like it no longer works very well. And then I made things way worse Thursday night because I came back to the hotel and I was like trying to have a little healthy snack. I had an apple. I had a little thing of peanut butter. I go to open up the little snack pack of peanut butter. And I'm like, well, that's liquidy. That must be a lot of oil in the peanut butter. It spilled everywhere. It was maple syrup that I grabbed the wrong one from the hotel breakfast bar. So now I got maple syrup all over my keyboard. So my keyboard smells like Vermont, and I'm sure it will be possible to use tomorrow. I'm in bad shape here. The Cardinals, they started off good, Chris, but I took a loss on Thursday.
Yeah, we're going to get into, you know, the post-target portion. But Ben Fredrickson is with us, and we're brought to you by the Ophthalmology Associates. So let's talk about what's happened and what has happened leading up to the game, Ben. And that is the Cardinals getting, I guess I would say quickly, but I'll defer to you since you've been covering it, getting up to the 85% vaccination threshold. Give folks an idea from your vantage point of how it happened and walk us through kind of what the implications are right now and the effect that this will have as hopefully things continue to roll along and teams are able to get vaccinated and move forward.
Yeah, I think it's a huge story, Chris, perhaps even bigger than the season opening win. I think it will help the Cardinals. The fact that they were able to get there, I think it will help them competitively. I think it will help them in terms of team building. They get to spend more time around each other. I think it'll help their quality of life, just being able to have their family around more when they're on the road. This will all kick in like 2 weeks after, I guess it would be Monday night that they got to Cincinnati and were able to have the first shots in arms. So there's lots of conversation about when they get there. There are a lot of, you know, people taking shots at the Cardinals for having some reservations. 85% of a traveling squad getting vaccinated is better than the, I think, the national average, at least now, in terms of like workplaces and things of that nature, for whatever reasons. But the Cardinals did get there. And I think it will, what it will do is allow them to have a little more normal season. They can play cards on the plane. They can go out to eat as a team. These things that help teams, you know, kind of become teams. I don't underestimate the impact of that. But also, too, it gives them a, you know, less, so much less of a chance of having a season derailed by this virus, which we saw happen to them last season. And which is already happening, unfortunately, to some degree, to the Nationals. You know, they had to postpone their season opener because of a positive test. And I think, unfortunately, baseball made a mistake here by not, you know, by not getting vaccines in the arms of players who wanted them by the time everybody left Florida and Arizona. Major League Baseball didn't have a plan very much, and they were so concerned about, you know, players not line jumping, which is a fair concern. Like, you don't want to see pro athletes going to get their vaccines before grandmas and grandpas do. But by the time spring training was over, it sure seemed like the free-for-all was pretty much on. And you kind of wonder why baseball didn't try to knock it out when they had every team situated between two states, Florida and Arizona, and instead let them start traveling and kind of sort this out on their own. I think in hindsight, they're probably going to end up wishing they would have done them in Florida and Arizona before teams started the season.
Yeah, and do you think part of that was not just the perception that they would be line jumping, but the fact that things have gone relatively smoothly? I wonder if there was any implications or any sort of, and I don't want to say disagreement, that there were disagreements about the process between the owners and players potentially, Ben, since that seems to be connected to just about everything over the last year plus and will be probably moving forward.
Well, I don't think this was any sort of, you know, standoff between those guys. I think it was Major League Baseball being very hyperly aware of not looking like it was taking advantage of the system. And I get that.
Bad PR,
And that's real. I mean, look at the roasting that Charles Barkley took for saying that that he thought pro athletes should be some of the first in line. Down at spring training, every time I went to my Instagram account, there was someone who was like my age or younger and probably way healthier who had the vaccine. And there's different takes on that. Some people's reaction is like, why are they getting it before someone who I know who's more at risk? And I get that. My thing has been at this point, you know, where you live, what state, what county, all that stuff factors into who is eligible, your job. It just seemed like the free for all was kind of on by the time spring training ended. And I wondered if, they could have minimized this risk that we've seen happen with the Nationals by having a plan in place to not, you know, have teams leave their spring training locations until vaccines are up. However, there's another point to bring up there. The owners wanted to push things back a month, a little bit, and have a 154 game season instead of 162. And if that was the case, maybe the vaccines would have been throughout baseball. But look, the way this is starting, it sure looks like most teams are going to have a full 162-game season, which is what the players wanted. And there's also no guarantee that every player will get it. So they can't make the guys get it. They can encourage them and they can incentivize it by having these protocols lessened for teams that reach a certain threshold. But, you know, they can't force anybody to take this thing. And there will be guys who don't want to and won't. So, you know, they'll be probably shamed or whatever. And, you know, everyone can decide what they want to, how they want to feel about that. The fact is, teams that can get a high number of guys with the vaccine are going to have that much less of a chance to have this thing impact their season. So in that way, just purely in the baseball sense, it's a competitive advantage. And the Cardinals being the first team to get there, they're in pretty good shape.
You know, I think my stance on it, and we'll move on, but is people are always going to find ways to do what's best for them, for their families, and even if it's not necessarily always above board, but just like, just don't put it on social media. Like all the people that, and I don't even care. Like, I think it's great. Everyone get it as quickly as possible. It's hard. I know people have different sensitivities. I would just love, you know, like people get whatever shamed for doing a lot of things, but just like, you don't need to like put it on Instagram. Like you said, every time you go on Instagram, it's become the new I voted sticker, and I'm not making, I'm certainly not, you know, I don't want to just fantastic, go and get it. But, you know, like, come on, like we really need to make everything about putting a picture on social media. Like you went to Covington, Kentucky and went to Target and
I should have selfie like, that.
Yeah. Well, no, you were doing an Instagram story like, hey guys, Ben here in Covington. Let's go see what Target's like. Then you kind of does like the time lapse choppy video as you walk in and the music plays.
I knew I forgot something when I went over there. Yeah,
happy one-year anniversary to your TikTok video, by the way.
Oh, yeah, as I went viral, yeah, acting like an idiot at spring training last year. I guess I shouldn't be the one to judge on this. I see it kind of one of two ways. I think there's room for people who have, you know, I don't know what the right word is, people who people pay attention to, forward-facing figures, not claiming that sports writers are one of them, but athletes, celebrities, musicians, for those people to promote getting the vaccine, maybe that encourages someone who's on the fence to do it. You know, I would say no one needs encouragement, but clearly some do. Some people have questions. Some people are in the wait and see mode on this thing. I'm not personally, but you know, who I don't, you know, I'm not the one who gets to tell everybody what to think. So there is, I think, an advocacy element that maybe I overlook, and I understand that argument, but I also think what some people have turned it into is, you know, look at me, or they don't realize maybe that for people who haven't been able to get it or you know, haven't had someone help them get it or whatever, it can be a bit, not insulting isn't the right word, but it can make people feel left out if they're trying to and have struggled to get it, which there's an element to that too. But yeah, figuring out why people handle social media the way they do is going to be a great question of our time, Chris, and I just don't think we're going to be able to sort it out in this time that we have together here.
Ben Fredrickson is with us. Yeah, if you get, like, it's going to get to the point that somebody gets stabbed and they're in the ER, like, stabbing selfie, like, just got stabbed at the ER. Like, come on, you don't need to do that. Let's talk about the Cardinals' first inning and an offense that has looked last three, four seasons, Ben, the same, regardless of if the names are different. I know it's one game. We have 162 more, but what do you believe in this year's version of the Cardinals? Can we take from today? Were there aspects of why this lineup was constructed and will be constructed the way that it was today, for instance, that you think start to tell the story of the way this team could look?
I think it certainly gives us a look at what the Cardinals think their lineup can be. And again, you nailed it. One game, you don't go crazy. You know, a lot of games left in a ballpark where runs are easy to come by. The Great American Ballpark is an offense incubator. So you don't go too nuts about it. And Luis Castillo didn't have the best night. So, but that being said, if the Cardinals would have won the game 2-1, I think we would all be grousing about the offense. If they would have lost, you know, 1-0, then we certainly would be. So I think it's fair to say there, look at the good things that happened here. You know, they had 10 hits, They scored 11 runs. They had as big of a first inning as a team has had on opening day since they go back to like the Braves in 2010. What I loved about it is they didn't stop there. It's easy sometimes, especially for this team in past couple seasons, to have a big inning and then ghost after that. Well, if they would have done that in this game, it would have at least been a tie. They tacked on another in the second. They added four more in the fourth. And it was all spread out. The first five hitters in the lineup had at least one hit. The Goldschmidt Arenado combination was as good as anybody could have hoped. They go 6-for-10 combined in the game, and they did it. They scored all kinds of different ways. There were two home runs. Dylan Carlson hits a huge one in the first inning. Tyler O'Neill, a big one later. They scored a run with smart base running on a wild pitch. They had hits that beat the shift. They Jack Flaherty hitting ninth worked two of the team's three walks. And they only struck out seven times. They didn't strike out once until the fourth inning. That's when the first strikeout came. So I thought you saw an example of what they've talked about all offseason of making pitchers throw strikes and then punishing them when they do. And that's easier said than done. But for a lineup that, you know, has one big splash in Nolan Arenado but needs everybody else to rise around him, this was a sign, I think, that they can do that. Now, will they every game? We'll see. But clearly they looked like a deeper, more dynamic lineup to me in the first time we've seen them in a game that counts.
Assuming no injuries, the trio that started in the outfield today of Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, and Justin Williams, how many of those three will play, again, assuming no injuries, how many of those three will be starting in the first game after the All-Star?
Well, I think right now you would have to bet on Carlson and Tyler O'Neill. Williams is going to get the first crack at this, but I think we're going to see Lane Thomas, who's on the taxi squad. I think we're going to see Austin Dean. John Nagowski is hoping to prove that he can fit into the outfield conversation at some point. Tommy Edman could play out there if Matt Carpenter ever gets going. I mean, there's a lot of options. The Cardinals view this as two, I think, starters in Tyler O'Neill and Dylan Carlson, but then right field or that other outfield spot is going to be, I think, more of a mix. See what sticks, see if somebody grabs it. But clearly, Justin Williams, being left-handed, having some really loud exit velocity this spring, he's going to get the first go at it, but it could cycle. It could change. Carlson is happy in center field. He likes playing there, but you know, when Bader comes back a month from now, if no one has secured it, then things could look a little bit different. But Carlson and O'Neill are going to be in there, I think, more times than not. It's the other spot that is going to, I think, change hands more often. Williams has a chance here to grab it and not let it go. He was the only player in the game of note who didn't get a hit in this one. So you'd like to see some offense show up for him, and his defense has been more confident, more I think, clean this spring. And we saw him make some sharp plays in right field in the opener. He's going to get a shot here, but there's going to be less, I think, less security for him than there will be for O'Neill and Carlson.
So do you believe that Tyler O'Neill will produce enough to play every day?
Well, I think he has impressed me to this point. And I say that's after a really impressive spring. When I went to spring training, kind of not understanding why the team said, you know, it really seemed like he was being slotted as the starter without much of a chance for Lane Thomas. Well, at that point, Lane Thomas was 5 for his first 10 in spring. And then Tyler O'Neill had a surge, and Lane Thomas really kind of quieted to the point that Williams jumped ahead of him, even after Bader got hurt. Tyler O'Neill has really answered some of my questions about him so far. He's doing a lot of different things. He's not swinging out of his shoes at every pitch he swings at. He's taking what pitchers give him. His power is so real and so strong that he doesn't have to try to do too much. And he's actually, you know, listening to that now and showing some of that now. So I'm not ready to say that I think he's going to be a cleanup or a number five hitter established for a contending team, but I can see why the Cardinals are giving him that shot. And to this point, for a huge season for him, he has answered all the questions so far. And he had a great, obviously, first start of the season. So I've been the one kind of pumping the brakes on the Tyler O'Neill bandwagon after his production had declined the past three seasons, but he sure looks more confident, sure looks more comfortable, and he looks like a guy who's got, you have a much harder time getting him out now than you did in the past. And if he can do that, then I think he's not just a major league starter, but a dynamic hitter. His power is so real that if he just becomes a more diverse hitter a little bit and starts using that power in all sorts of different ways, not always trying to hit home runs, then I think he becomes a secured starter for this team for probably years to come. We'll see.
Ophthalmology associates are called the doctor's doctors because when it comes to eye care, more doctors trust them than anyone else. So if doctors trust Ophthalmology Associates, shouldn't you trust them with your eyes as well? If you are thinking about LASIK, if you're having allergy issues, dry eye, think about baseball season starting. Think about how important everyone's eyes are for their livelihood, whether you're watching a baseball come in at 100 miles an hour or you're watching the game after a day at work. Your eyes deserve the very best care, and that's why you deserve the doctor's doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. Just give them a call at 966-5000, but I need you to tell them you heard about them on the Chris Rabe Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Their website is YourEyeDoc.com, especially this time of year in the spring. I know allergies can be an issue, whether you're, you know, in the house and you've got the windows open, as a lot of us have, or you're on the golf course at the ball game. The doctor's doctors at Ophthalmology Associates can help. So go to YourEyeDoc.com, call 966-5000, 314-966-5000. Schedule your appointment. Tell them Chris Rabe sent you. Dr. Greg Birdie, Dr. Ranjan Malhotra, Dr. Robert Rosati, and Dr. Andrew Royer at Ophthalmology Associates.
Yeah, you mentioned John Nagowski as well. And, you know, I know that, especially outside of folks who really follow the Cardinals, the storyline or the thing that opposing announcers or the thing in the game notes will be, you know, the number of minor league games he's played and this and that. It's fantastic that his family gets to be, he gets to be there in Cincinnati, but he's another guy who's just, he's just really good. And he has hit everywhere he's been, Ben. And as you were rattling through those outfielders, I'm not saying John Nagowski is going to be playing, you know, the lion's share of games anywhere, but maybe Mike Schilt and his staff are creative enough that they don't need to, you know, follow the, well, just got to run basically the same guys out there. You got to have an everyday guy at every position because that's the way it is. Maybe creativity allows some of these guys to flourish.
Yeah, I mean, he fought his way onto the roster by proving certain expectations of him wrong. Schilt said he elbowed his way on. So I'm not going to be the one who sits there and say he couldn't elbow his way into the outfield because he was playing there some by the end of spring training. He played there in high school. He's not some newcomer at the position. I asked him today.
I mean, we've seen Jose Martinez and Matt Carpenter in the outfield.
And Matt Adams. You know, I asked him, I said, have you convinced Schilt to play you out there? And he said, that's a great question. I've done my best. You know, he's got a great spirit about it. And he's exactly the kind of guy, Chris, who I think the Cardinals improve the aura of the team by taking with them. There's something to be said for taking the hottest bat from camp, especially on a bench where you've got Matt Carpenter, who struggled, Edmundo Sosa, who doesn't have options left. So he was more on the team because of the roster side of things more than his performance at spring. Good defender, but didn't hit well. And there's something to be said for taking the hot hand out of spring. Now, where will he get opportunities? How will he use them? He's going to have to, as he did this spring, force his way into the conversation more, but he very well could do that. And if he doesn't, then he's going to be the best and hardest working, most dedicated bench guy you can find. I'm really eager to see what he does in some pinch hit opportunities. He has shown an ability to hit high velocity, to hit right and left handed pitching. He's not a guy who you go, oh, that's cute. He made the team. I mean, I think he can help them. And how they figure out how to use him is going to be a key thing. He'll have to force his way out there, and it might take somebody going in a slump or somebody getting nicked up. But if he goes out there, he might be out there for a while. I think we have to give him the benefit of the doubt before we sell him short because he's proven us, a lot of us, wrong.
There's something about that kind of guy, and the Cardinals have had some of those guys who have grinded and had all sorts of success in the minors, then come up and had some really important at bats for them, like Jose Martinez, who handled Aroldis Chapman really well and velocity really well when he first came up. You know, Ronel Ravelo, and especially when he first came up in 2019 and, you know, had some really big pinch hit at bats and handled velocity well. And, you know, it's there's something to be said for not just the story of a guy like that, but for the fact that, you know, gets cliche sometimes to say he's professional, but these guys are sometimes just a very, very thin line away from the big leagues. And then how you utilize those guys within the organization can often be what can determine, you know, who's outside, who's inside the playoffs. A couple of games here, a couple of games there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Cardinals devil magic, guys. You know, that no one can explain it, but the Cardinals are good at having them and creating them. And you can see John Nagelsky having some of those moments this season. You really could. And I just like the story. I'm a sucker for a good story. He's got a great
absolutely
one. I mean, guy, you know, gets released by the A's. He has to turn to independent ball. He has a great Arizona Fall League, and here he is. And you know, he gets a little chippy when people talk about him as if he's some like you know, long shot, you know,
yeah, like
28-year-old rookie. Yeah, but he's not, you know, and I love that edge to him, but he's got a great sense of humor. He had a great line the other day. They said, you know, is your family here? And he said, yeah, oh, they would have been here if they had to walk. And then he said, it might have taken my dad a while. It's just, I mean, he's a good dude. And it's fun. I think it's a fun storyline. And I think it does have an element to the team where I think when you're in the clubhouse with a guy like that, you go, okay, here's an example of a guy who gave everything and worked his tail off and could have quit a million times to get here. And not that Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt need reasons to play hard. That's not what I'm implying. But having a guy like that around is a good reminder of how there are guys who work their tails off and never get that shot. And I think that's not a bad thing to have in a clubhouse.
Let's talk about Jack Flaherty. And I'm sure that there are folks who are frustrated and think that, you know, the sky is falling. As you said, just as we can't maybe anoint the Cardinals offense as the 27 Yankees after the first inning, you have to keep all things in perspective. What did you think of Jack? And, you know, less than ideal, perhaps, conditions and in that ballpark. And what do you make of just this year for Jack, big picture, the opportunity or the chance that he has maybe to take a step as this team takes a step in?
Well, I think it's a huge year for Jack. And I think he knows that. Whatever Jack wants to be, and we don't know yet, I don't think he knows yet, whether he wants to be the next Trevor Bauer or the next Bob Gibson or something in between, who knows? This year is going to be a big, I think, factor in determining that. You know, he has things that he wants to do. He wants to change the discussion about how young players get paid. He wants to bring attention to the different causes that are important to him. And he knows, this is not big news, that his ability to do that will be determined by how well he plays. It's not always the way it should be, but it's just the way that it is. And starts like this won't help him get there. That said, is it something worth panicking over? No, I don't know that it is. When it's 37 degrees at the first pitch and there's snow coming down, I don't know that I'm going to go nuts about reading into it. Jack Flaherty needs to pitch more than four and a third innings for this group, especially when Miles Michaelis and KK are not back. You don't want to have your bullpen picking up so many innings in a Jack Flaherty start. Same for Adam Wainwright. So Flaherty's not going to be happy allowing six earned runs and four and a third, and you know, giving up two homers, even though it's a homer friendly ballpark, and he shouldn't be happy with that. I do think it's a little bit of a different situation when you have such a weird start, you know, when you have six innings on the board, it changes things a little bit. You're more aggressive. You throw more strikes, and he got hit around a little bit for that. He was frustrated by creating trouble for himself, which he did some with the walks. And he's got to be better. It doesn't necessarily become an indication of how his season's going to go, but it wasn't a good start and it wasn't the one he wanted. He wasn't willing to blame the conditions, you know, the cold and that stuff. I'm sure it did play a bit of a factor. But this on a night where his first start in a game that counted since the offense left him out to dry in San Diego, it was good that the Cardinals offense picked him up for a change. And he was very appreciative of that. And I think that shows a little bit of where Jack is too. He raved about the offense while he was frustrated with himself. He didn't have, he was glad the team won and they need him to be a big part of that. So not a good start for him, but he got a win. That's the most important thing. He didn't get the win, but they got a win. You flush it and he needs to be sharper moving forward, because here's the deal. it's big season for Jack, but it will be a hard season for the Cardinals if they don't get really strong and deep starting pitching out of Jack and Adam Wainwright, especially until they get some guys back who can be relied upon in KK and Michaelis. There's just no way around it.
What are you going to do with the day off? You're going to use a transfer portal to get from Cincinnati to Covington, Kentucky tomorrow?
Man, speaking of the transfer portal, I don't even know who's left on Mizzou's
isn't
roster.
This crazy? Like,
well, and then I got, you know, I see the meme. It's a great meme of someone. Will Smith is Kobe Brown looking around the Mizzou roster, wondering where all of his friends went as like the last episode. But then I get Mizzou fans who are lighting me up saying, what's wrong with the team? Why is the culture falling apart? This is so bad. You know, and I'm like, wait a second. You guys were so mad that Torrance Watson was on the team. And now you're convinced the team is a mess because he's transferring. Which one is it? But I'm asking people and begging people to zoom out. I mean, look at all the transfers across the country, more than 1,000 names in the portal. It's going to be a mass exodus of players this season because they're going to be able to transfer wherever they want and play immediately. There's some coaching changes going on. So guys who could have been forced out because of a lack of eligibility are now going to get to come back because of the COVID, you know, the COVID added year. And that's going to make guys who were committed or maybe signed, but not have not yet played. They're going to bail because the depth chart ahead of them is going to change. There will be more chaos in college basketball this offseason than ever before. The pre-rankings that are going to come out after this championship is over, they're way too early next season rankings will be the worst. They're always bad. They're going to be the worst and least accurate ever because we won't even know what these teams are going to look like. So I'm asking people to just take a breath and realize that the team is going to look drastically different.
No, we don't like taking breaths.
If the team is worse, then there's a problem. But until that team is filled out, the team might get better. Missouri could get better with adding 4 to 5 transfers this season. They certainly should be more athletic than they were last season. So I'm not ready to panic yet, but my God, it's going to be a mess for college basketball. I do not envy these coaches this year. I would take most of their salaries, but I would not want the headaches. It's going to be a tough year for the mental sanity of college basketball coaches.
Does it get crowded in the portal? Is it like Fieldhouse on a Friday night at Mizzou? It's like one in, one out in the portal. I mean, it's just.
I think, yeah, like 10 below.
Shout out to the portal.
Yeah. They need to, you know, I just am impressed by like the 3 reporters who have passwords for it. And just like their day is spent by just tweeting out the new names that go into it. Like, I guess congrats on the scoop, but that doesn't seem like a very fun thing to do is just sit there and click refresh on the transfer portal. It's been a long day, brother. It's been a long day. But a good start for the Cardinals and hopefully a chance for Cardinals fans to enjoy some baseball, man.
You know, that's impossible.
I'll tell you this. Here's the thing, man. Being at the ballpark, small crowd, you know, distance, all that stuff. But I'm telling you what, a small crowd compared to what we had last season sounds like a playoff crowd. And I'm telling you, opening day at Busch Stadium is going to be wild, man. Like, this game felt like it was played in front of like, you know, 150,000 people because we got used to that eerie, awkward, terrible silence at the ballpark. There was energy. People were happy to be there. There was some sadness. I mean, they did a moment of silence for the folks who have been lost, and they did a thank you to the healthcare heroes. It was emotional to some degree. And then you're sitting there thinking, this happens at Busch. It's going to be, you know, a tribute to Lou Brock and Bob Gibson. Jack Flaherty had the tribute on the cleats today on the spikes. You're going to have, I'm sure the Cardinals will do something to honor some healthcare heroes who helped, you know, during the peak of the pandemic. It's going to be powerful stuff. And I know that it won't be the same as everybody being there in full, but I tell you, after hearing how bad and just quiet and sad the stadium sounded with nobody in them, it's really nice to have the sounds of the ballpark coming back. I do. If nothing else, I hope folks hear that I hope that resonates on the broadcasts and the you know, the Nat sound and the radio and all that stuff, because it sounds right. It sounds like baseball again.
It's awesome, man. It's great to hear. And I think that's just what everyone wanted. As spring training found a little spring training-y end where it was like, all right, let's get on with it. Like, that was good. That was good because it seemed normal. And you and Derek, keep up the great work, man. Don't go too crazy in Covington today on your off day. And
I'm not going to Covington, dude. I'm really not. I would tell you if I was.
Dude, listen, you're not going to make me feel bad. You're not, like, go and have fun. All right. Don't stay home for me. Go and live a little. All right.
You don't. All right. I'll bring you back a Wildcat shirt.
You're the best. Have fun out there in Covington. No, but read Ben at STLtoday.com. The Post-Dispatch, of course, as we are into the baseball season, and hear him every Friday here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Thank you, sir.
You bet, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. A big thanks to Ben. That's going to do it for us. Another week on the Chris Raby Show from the Ophthalmology Associates Studios. Visit them on the web at youridoc.com or call 314-966-5000. Either way, tell them that you heard about them on the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Have a wonderful Easter weekend. Go Cardinals, and we'll talk to you Monday. Until then, be nice to each other. And as always, peace.